Conversation Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. Today we are recording episode 128, and I can't believe I'm saying 128. I've been at this since 2023. We do these conversations on a weekly basis, sometimes two, three times a week, and I am happy to report that I checked our reports on the podcast, how we're doing health-wise, and I found out that we are now represented in almost 45, 48 countries around the world. Our listeners are distributed. People listen to us from every corner almost of the world, and I'm really happy that they are listening. Obviously, they find something very useful in these conversations. I hear in the comments that you guys give me back that it's easy to listen to. It's a conversation that is educational, and there are some nuggets, some gems inside of those conversations that people take notes of. Today, I have the honor and distinct pleasure to have with me Counselor Deepika De Merla. Deepika and myself met a few days ago, almost a week and a half ago now, at another citizen function. It was hosted by a friend of ours at their home. And for my first time was meeting Deepika at the time, and we sort of clicked on in a conversation, and we thought, hey, why don't we extend the conversation into a recorded podcast? So I want to thank you very much, Deepika, for being with me today. It's an honor and pleasure to have you on the podcast. I know you have better things to do on Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening than 8 o'clock trying to record a podcast with Robin, but here you go. You are with me. You're stuck for about an hour. So thanks so much for being part of this conversation.
Thank you for having me, Robin. Delighted to be here. And on a snowy evening, what could be better than a nice fireside chat?
Absolutely. There you go. With all the cold that we and the snow that we have outside, fireside sounds very refreshing nowadays. My first question, Deepika, if you don't mind, why don't we start by telling the audience, on this channel, we say everybody's got a story. So what is your story? Can we start with that one?
My story is a very typical Canadian story. I came to Canada from India as a very young woman. I did my MBA at the first, completed my BCom at the University of Toronto, and then I went on to do my MBA at the University of Toronto Rockman School of Management. I worked in banking, and I was always interested in politics. You know, when I was at university, I joined student clubs and political clubs and all of that. And then, you know, life gets in the way. You have your kid, you know, I had my daughter, and sort of politics took a back seat. And then, it was always attracted to politics. And one of the things that really stood out for me in Canadian politics was how accessible Canadian politicians are relative to many other parts of the world where, you know, in many other parts of the world, for example, in India, and I know things are changing in India too, but I'm just telling you, when I was growing up, you could never imagine meeting with a member of parliament. I mean, you'd be lucky to meet the member of parliament's assistant, you know, so there was a very hierarchical society. And here it was so open and so welcoming. And that really caught my interest because for the first time, you know, Robin, I realized something. When we think of democracies, we always think of one person, one vote, which is a modern democracy. Everybody has the right to vote and it's an equal vote. But you know what the flip side is? Who gets to run for office? And if who gets to run for office is really limited, the value of that one person, one vote is diminished, right? It's only when it's not just everybody has the right to vote, but everybody has a realistic chance to run for office. That's the other side of democracy. And I felt that in Canada, that opportunity was there. And that was something that I thought was powerful and rare. And that's what really got me into politics. And I remember Bob Rae once saying, there's the politics of engagement and there's the politics of protest. And you need both. Protests raise issues, you know, they bubble to the top. But then you need the politics of engagement to solve as well. And so I was attracted to the politics of engagement and I ran, got into politics and here I am.
You know, you bring a very good topic which always been discussed, you know, not in democratic society, but probably outside of democratic society where the people talk about, you know, accessibility to politicians. That's very true in many countries around the world that you can be like on a handful. You can count probably maybe two hands of countries where you can have accessibility to decision makers or politicians, but the rest of the world probably is in a space where you can't have that. And the second thing is that acceptance, meaning that as a society, mature enough to accept the results of an election. A lot of people don't see that as in various countries, when people lose elections, there'd be war starting, right? So here in a modern society, in a modern democracy, I feel like people accept the election results. You don't like what the choice the majority has selected. Maybe you'll wait for the next election and better luck next time, so to speak. Nobody goes home mad about that one. I exercise my democratic right. And so it is. What do you feel about that?
No, you know, the smooth transition of power is one of the most amazing innovations of modern democracies, right? It's not always this way, that power moved smoothly without blood spilling. That it happens, even though it happens in few countries, it doesn't happen in every country in the world. The fact that it even happens is, I think, a testimony to ourselves and to every country that manages that. It's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Now, Deepika, the reason we got really in tune in our first conversation was around the conditions and the city economics and budgets that's coming up here in the city of Mississauga. Let's dive slowly into that. So the first question would be is, have you heard from your constituents in Ward 7, for instance, or any other Mississauga residents on the topic of affordability? And what are you hearing? What are people telling you on that topic?
Yeah, it's, Robin, top of mind for people. Affordability is top of mind. And I can tell you that last year, the city of Mississauga had one of the largest, historic largest increases in property taxes last year, the largest single increase. And it was really, really tough for a lot of homeowners. Really, really tough. I'll be transparent. I did vote against the budget. But that said, the budget did pass. And so, yes, I think this year, if you've heard from a lot of residents saying they cannot afford another double digit tax increase like we had last year, I think close to 10%.
So I just for context for the listeners, in 2025 budget, the property tax rose 9.2% in Mississauga, and the proposed budget increase for 2026 is 10.4%. Over 2 years, you're going to be averaging about 20% increase in property taxes for residents in the city. This is where the conversation of affordability comes in, and comes in very hard in terms of people like myself who lives in the city. I'm a citizen of the city of Mississauga. Those things don't go unnoticed for me and for many others. And it's a topic of conversation. I know in my family, we talk about it all the time. My neighbors, everybody concerned about the affordability on the property tax increase. Now, you and I talked about walk us through the process, the mechanism inside of a city. For those who are not familiar, how, for instance, councillors and get to be informed about these things, and how does, you know, a budget gets, you know, built inside of a city, for instance, how do we get to the 10.4? How did we come up with that number? If you don't mind, I know you explained it to me, but the audience will be very interesting to them.
The numbers are very preliminary, right? That's the first thing I want all listeners to know, that that's not the number we are going to end up with. Those are very preliminary numbers. And what you essentially do, how you build a budget, is the first step you say is, if I wanted to provide all of the services that I provided last year, this year, what's it going to cost me? Because there's always inflation. So if it cost me $100 last year to provide 10 services, to provide those same 10 services, it's going to cost $105. So that's your starting point. So you start at $105, right? And then you say, well, what else do I want to add? Do we want to add services? And if you want to add services, then you add those. And that's how you build your budget. So really, you know, in that sense, it's very easy to understand. Find hard to understand. Not hard to understand, but it is the fact that as a municipality, we deal in human beings and services. We don't build things, we provide services. And because we provide services, there's the human touch and a lot of human beings. So our biggest expense line, you guessed it, is salaries.
Labor.
And as you know, labor costs increase each year. We have a lot of unions and we have wage settlements with unions. So there is that inflationary cost increase. And even with the non-unionized labor, we try to be fair with them. And sort of, so there is usually every year, it costs us more to provide the same services. That's our starting point. The other interesting thing, if you happen to be a resident in Mississauga, is that we have two levels of government. We have the regional appeal, the city of Mississauga. And if you've noticed carefully, when your garbage truck comes, it says region of appeal. But when it's your snow clearance, it's the city of Mississauga. If you see somebody cutting grass on city land, that's city of Mississauga. So that's the two levels of government. And that adds a little bit of complexity. One of the most interesting things about municipal budgets is the police budget. Now, the police budget is very interesting because it is probably the single largest budget piece that we have. But as council, we don't control it. It's very important for residents to understand that. The way the Police Act is written, it's written to say that adequate policing must be provided. So who can decide what is adequate policing? You and I, we are lay people. Can we really say how many police officers or how many weapons are required to keep the city of Mississauga safe? Hard for us. So we have to rely on the police board. So the police board actually comes up with a budget. And under the Police Act, as a councillor, I cannot say to the police that, hey, you know, you're saying 30 million for officers and 5 million for weapons. Can you make the weapons 4 million? I'm not allowed to go line by line. I can say, I have to say yes to the whole budget or no to the whole budget. I can't say, you know, I'm comfortable with 80% of your budget, but these three lines, I'm going to vote against, but the rest of the budget, I'm going to approve. I don't have that ability. I have to either say yes to the whole thing or no to the whole thing. And that puts us in a very difficult position because obviously we need community safety. We don't want to be responsible, and no budget is there where everything is unacceptable. Sometimes it's only small pieces that are not acceptable, but we are handcuffed. What happens if we say no? If we say no to, there's two possibilities. Either the police can go back and look at their whole budget and come back with a smaller number, or they can go to arbitration. And then the arbitration, there's an arbitrator, their word is final. So as you can see, our control over the police budget is quite limited. Our ability to say no only triggers arbitration. It doesn't necessarily mean that the police will reduce their budgets. And because the police budget is such a big chunk of our budget, like last year, the police budget went up, the police piece went up by 23%, not property taxes, but that resulted in a fairly hefty tax increase, right? So this year, we'll see what happens, but the police has come back with a fairly significant ask again.
And Robin,
and I'm happy to, if you have follow-up questions.
Yeah, like I was just going to get like for the audience, just to get a bit of a sense of what we're talking about in terms of numbers. If you don't mind sharing, let's say, how many employees does the city of Mississauga have, and or how many police members or how staff, whatever you want to characterize them at, just to get an idea of the numbers that we're talking about here. And what is the total budget for this city?
The city's own budget is around $750 million. From the tax base, you know, then we have obviously utilities and that's different stuff. The rate base or the tax base is $750 million for the city of Mississauga. On top of that is the region of Peel, and the region of Peel is about $1 billion.
And the number of employees in the city of Mississauga is how many? Or region of Peel?
I believe, you know, I don't have an exact number, but I'm going to say
just an estimate.
5,000 people.
And you mentioned to me last time when we were talking, going back to how the councillors, for instance, in the cities, that they have no ability to dissect the numbers or at least have a discussion about the items in the proposed budgets, etc. And you mentioned something about auditing. And you mentioned something around the auditing process that takes place either internally. And you were suggesting perhaps in auditing that it probably similar to the auditor general in the federal government and trying to figure out another way of looking at the numbers, but from a third party perspective. Would you mind digging into that a little bit for us and explaining it to us a little bit better?
Absolutely. So, some of your listeners are going to be familiar with right now, there's a bit of a scandal going on around the Skills Development Fund provincially, where there have been accusations that the government has been giving out funds to companies and organizations that perhaps are not the best recipients of taxpayer dollars. In fact, what the reports have said is that the government has given out $750 million in grants to organizations that the civil service said don't give. So we consider the civil service to be apolitical. They go through their checklist and they come up and say, you know, these companies don't give these companies good candidates to give the skills development grant. So of the companies that the civil servant said don't give, $750 million was given out. To understand how much is $750 million, that's the city of Mississauga's budget. So that was the scale of money given to organizations that shouldn't have received it. But how did we learn about it? Because the province has an auditor general. Similarly, some moons ago, we may remember there was this big scandal around the Greenbelt. How did we find out about it? It was the provincial auditor general. Similarly, there was a lot of talk about how the federal government, the CRA isn't working well, which is the Canada Revenue Agency, the call center, right? How did we find out about it? Because the federal government has an auditor general. And last year, there was a story about how at the city of Toronto, city of Toronto employees were logging in saying that they were at work at the parks, but were actually sitting in coffee shops, right, and having coffee, but making it look like they were working. How did we find out about it? The auditor general. So the auditor general is the taxpayer's best friend, because their job is to give a second set of eyes to how any government is spending money. And so we have an auditor general at the federal government level, we have one at the provincial level, and we have one at the city of Toronto. But the region of Peel, which is probably the next largest level of government after Ottawa and Toronto in terms of municipal governments, has no auditor general. And we are spending billions of dollars every year. But there's nobody saying, hey, is this the best use of money? And so this past summer, I brought a motion forward that said, it's time for the region of Peel to have an auditor general. I think this is powerful. The region of Peel, as I said, is probably the third largest municipal government in Ontario, which means it's a very big government. And I'm very excited that we're going to have an auditor general. I'm happy to talk about what an auditor general can and cannot do. But if you had any follow-up questions on this.
Yeah, I would, you know, for clarification, you said you're happy we are going to have an auditor general. It means that passed and we are going to have an auditor general? Or is it still a decision process now?
So the motion was passed and we are now in the process of hiring one. So hopefully sometime next year.
Oh, congratulations. I didn't know that. Wow, we have some breaking news here.
And thank you, Robin. But you know, the frustrating thing is, even though the motion passed last summer, like very few people know about it. You know, but it is such an important.
Yeah, I didn't know about it. I mean, until I talked to you, I didn't know about it.
Because it's not that something, I guess, Mississauga, for example, doesn't have much. It does have some media, doesn't have a lot of local media. So it's not like the Toronto Star is reporting on what's happening in Mississauga. So yeah, it's a shame. But I think this is very good. If you're a property taxpayer in Mississauga, this is good news.
So on the Auditor General, I just have one more follow-up question on that topic. You mentioned, the Auditor General should be considered the best friend of the taxpayer. I want to ask you the flip side of that coin. Would the Auditor General in this case be assumably not so good friend of the city staff?
So, you know, and that's a very good question. And it all depends on one's attitude. And certainly, you know, there could be a sense that this is the auditor, right? But I think cities, whether it's city staff, the vast majority of city staff want to do the right thing. So I would say that the auditor general is their best friend too, because what the auditor general is doing is saying, you're doing this, you've been doing this thing for the last 30 years the same way. Is there a way to do this in a better way? Or if some, you know, 0.001% of people commit fraud, everybody else is honest. The auditor general will find that fraud, right? So they'll find the bad apple. So actually, the auditor general is the best friend of not only the taxpayer, but also, I think, of management and council.
Absolutely. It's a balanced approach, I'm assuming, in this case.
Yeah, I think it shouldn't be adversarial unless you have something to hide. As long as it's just, you know, the auditor general might say, this is not good value for money, right? You know, for example, when you look at that example in Toronto, where these park staff were logging in that they were working in the parks but are actually sitting at Tim Hortons, even the management doesn't know, because, you know, in the IT system, it's all logged in. So this is good for management to know as well. So I think it's good all around.
Good all around, absolutely. Now, one of the items as a taxpayer here in the city of Mississauga that people talk a lot about, and I don't know how much people, some people here have educated themselves on how this system work inside of inside the city council and the process itself. And you and I talked a little bit about this one. You've recited to me, or you told me about a situation where there was an app to be purchased, and that app, yes, you were questioning, you were saying, do we really need that app? And there was a cost associated with it. And which sort of like brings the point of how do these projects gets adopted at the lower level, and it finds its way all the way to be voted on. In some cases, they haven't really passed the smell test. Could you walk us through that, and specifically that example?
I will. Two things that I just wanted to say before I answer that, Robin. One is I wanted to correct myself. I think I said the region appeals budget was $1 billion. No, the operating budget is closer to $3 billion. So that just tells you how large the region appeals budget is. The other thing that's really important to keep in mind is that the Auditor General, by law, is not able to audit the police budget, which is a big chunk of the region appeals budget. And I think that that's something that the provincial government needs to look at, because I respect the police. They do a fantastic job. And, you know, they're our partners in keeping our cities safe. But I think everybody wins if the police's books are open to the Auditor General, same as everybody else's. So I wanted to make that point. On the issue of, yes, you know, I am on council, you know, one of the councillors who's always watching how we spend our pennies, because I believe you watch the pennies and the pounds will take care of themselves, or in our case, the dollars will take care of themselves. That's why I brought the Auditor General in at the region of Peel. But I'm going to just give you a simple example of how important it is for us to pay attention to the details. Recently, there was a proposal at City Hall to spend about $8 million over the next, you know, 7 years or so to provide transit riders with a free transit app. Now, the problem is there's already a lot of free transit apps. I mean, most people are already using Google Apps or Apple Apps, right? So the question is, why is the city of Mississauga suddenly deciding to pay a third party $7 million so that people living in Mississauga going on my way can use a free app when there's already other free apps available? Like, that's not the best use of taxpayer dollars. And then when I asked and pushed back and asked staff, you know, what are the benefits? Some of the benefits they said was, well, you can, there were some benefits. Obviously, there were some bells and whistles, no questions about that. But the free apps were good enough, right? What I said was, instead of spending $7 million making it easier to tell people your bus is going to be late, why don't we spend the $7 million on hiring more buses or hiring more bus drivers so that our buses are not late, right? So luckily, all of council agreed, and we were able to, we did not approve that. But this is an example of how does something like this bubble up, right? So that ability to say need to have and nice to have. Did that 7 million, did that transit app have some bells and whistles? Absolutely. But it was already a perfectly good free app. So why are we spending $7 million of taxpayers' money? But so you really have to watch it, because if you don't, you can pass it, and then that's passed on to the taxpayer. And so it's the kind of thing that you really, really have to watch. And it's something that I spend a lot of time on.
So, you know, you bring up, you almost like you have to be, as a councilor, you have to be like your own, you know, the city, sorry, like in your own jurisdiction, you're representing Ward 7, and you're speaking on their behalf and watching their dollars, how they're being spent in the city. To some people, probably they think they see councilor Deepika DeMerla or any other councilor in the city, they probably think it's a ceremonial thing that, you know, you show up to meeting, you raise your hand to vote, or you don't, and that's just about it. But from what I'm hearing from this conversation and the previous conversation that I had with you, it's a lot more involved than that. It's almost like you have to be your own financial detective and try to figure out where things are, which drawer hiding what. I don't know. It's not as ceremonial as one would think.
It's not ceremonial at all, Robin. It's a privilege and an absolute honor to be able to do this job, and I love it. But it's a lot of work, because every Wednesday we have council, which means we have a binder yetek full of things that, you know, are coming to us for approval. And you've got to read the reports, and you sort of need to have perspective, because when you read the report, we'll take this transit app. When you read the report, it makes a case for the transit app, but you have to know that these free transit apps are available. right? If you didn't know that the free transit apps are available, maybe it looks like a good idea or not. So you kind of need to be sort of aware of all of the things that are happening in and around you. It's a lot of reading. And then we have every other week, we have regional council, another binder this thick. Then we have planning, another binder this thick. So these are all committee meetings where we vote. I also sit on governance committee. So that's, again, lots of decisions and reports that we have to follow up on. Heritage committee, racism committee. So yes, it's a lot of work. And then, of course, then there's the phone calls about my tree is sick, or, you know, the fence here, my neighbor's fence is leaning into my fence. All of those issues as well. So, yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a tough job. I think, you know, I'm glad you clarified that, because, you know, even on a small scale, like if somebody, I don't know, running an office, or they have a job with somebody, they work 8 to 5. I don't think your job ends. I'm here we go on Sunday evening recording a podcast with me. I don't think there's a set hours for your work, for any council to work, because they still need to answer
many
to
days
a lot of
I feel like many days. I feel like my day is now starting at 7 p.m. because that's when all the events begin.
That's right. Just to back into how this whole financing worked for the city of Mississauga, could you perhaps, where you're standing, if you don't mind, perhaps get into the conversation around how is the relationship financially between the city and the province and the federal government, if there is any? Is there a connection? Is there a funding? Is there a transfer of sort? Do they support? Do they help? And given the fact, and this for the audience, I think the region of Peel, I think, is the second largest in Canada now, or the third. I know it's in the top five. I don't know where is the ranking right now, to be honest, but it's one of the largest regions in the country. Yeah, so you mentioned policing earlier, you mentioned a few things, and you know, when it comes to policing, I live in the city, right? So obviously I know what's going on. We feel what's going on from a security perspective. You know, you walk around, you tell people, like, you know, how do you feel? And me and my neighbors, I tell you, you know, we feel, you know, we're okay. It's coming, you know, nobody is directly impacted, but the sense of security is less. You know, how do we, what is the relationship between the provinces and the federal government with the city, and specifically around policing or any other programs, but specifically around policing? And is that helpful or not?
So it's two questions in there. The first is, there's a number of services that the city of Mississauga provides that we fund from your property taxes. But there's also a bunch of services that the region of Peel provides that are funded partially by the Ontario government and partially by your property taxes. So public health is a good example. Now, you would think that public health would be 100% funded by the province because it's health. But no, it's I forget the exact formula. I think it's 70-30 or 60-40. I can't remember. Like 60% is funded by the province, but 40% is funded by the municipal government from your property taxes. The same thing, you know, whether it's Ontario Works, whether it's affordable housing, there's a cost sharing, and a number of these social services are falling on your property tax, and I fundamentally disagree with that. Property taxes, in my opinion, are meant to provide your hard municipal services, your snow clearing, making sure your parks, your libraries work, your swimming pools work, that your the roads are maintained, sidewalks are maintained, sewer system works. But when it comes to income redistribution, poverty alleviation, so whether it's all of those social services, they should not fall on the property tax. It should come out of your income tax, which is a redistributive tax. But property taxes are not redistributive, and it is folly. And we are doing this every year, where more and more social services are falling on the property tax. And the only way to change that is we need the provincial government and the federal government as our partners. Let me give you an example. At the height of the refugee crisis, as you will remember, especially 2 winters ago and even last winter, we had a lot of refugees coming in. And, you know, what happens is that the federal government sitting in Ottawa, guess who has to deal with the refugee who is at a shelter? It's the municipal government, because we are the boots on the ground. So it falls to us now to find a way to house this asylum seeker who has just gotten off a plane in the middle of winter, doesn't have any winter clothing. The federal government is sitting in Ottawa, but it is this municipal government. It is I, as the councillor, who gets calls saying our shelters are full and people are camping outdoors. So then what do? We end up dipping into our reserves, and then we have to fight with the federal government for reimbursement. That is wrong.
That's wrong. Yeah, that's right.
The federal immigration, refugee policy, asylum claimants, it's all 100% federal policy. It's the federal government's job. If they are accepting asylum seekers, I am happy to be at the municipal level providing the boots on the ground, but the federal government has to fund us. They cannot expect us to put it on the property tax. And for us to, often we are paying for this out of our reserves, not knowing whether the federal government will come through. And then when they come through, they still nickel and dime us. They'll only pay us 90% and say, oh, 10%. You pay from your property tax. That's wrong. We need to change this.
So when you say it's wrong,
the federal government to pay 100%. Sorry.
Sorry, Deepika, when you say it's wrong, is there a law against it? Or is it just an understanding? Is it written somewhere that we should not touch the property taxes?
It's not about law. It's about the fact that property taxes are what we call regressive, right? Because they don't look at your income. Like you could be house rich and income poor, right? So property taxes are not the right way to alleviate social services. Social services should not be paid from property taxes. Let me tell you another example, right? So when this asylum seeker comes, it is all of Canada's responsibility to look after this asylum seeker. When the federal government pays for it, it's coming from Canadians across the country. Instead, you're putting all of it on the city of Mississauga's property taxpayer. Is that fair?
Yeah,
just because the airport is in Mississauga, right? So the Mississauga property taxpayer is bearing a disproportionate burden of a federal expense.
Yeah, that's right. Now, we talked briefly on a specific topic, you and I. We talked about transparency in information. You know, now transparency is becoming more and more of a hotter topic, I think. And why is that? It's because when, you know, cities and municipalities or government, for that matter, comes back to the citizens saying, hey, I want more money. Well, the citizen at some point is going to say, what are you doing with it? And, you know, to figure out what are you doing with it, you know, we need to get some information out. And you know, if I look at the process currently, it's basically designed to be under, it's out there. People can dig and find out and the information is available. Yeah. I know somebody's going to say, well, the information is out there. Yeah. Not that obvious though. You need to make it more obvious. You know, the debt clock in New York, you know, that thing that keeps, you know, they put it up on a building. Everybody can see it. You know, I wish we have something that we can say, okay, so here's what we collected, here's what we spent, here's the projects that we're working on, and here's what how we're doing against budget. Why not share that information with the citizens? So this is, it can feel, you know, that there's something being done with their money and we're spending the money in the right way. Like not come back every year and say, I need 10% or 9% or whatever the number we settle at in 2026. That's not something that's going to sit well with people.
I agree. So transparency is a really, really, it's the cornerstone. So I like to put it this way. For democracy to work, there has to be trust. Trust between the people and the elected representatives. And how do you make that trust happen? By being transparent. So transparency is absolutely 5,000% critical to a successful democracy. The challenge is that what governments do is they do one of two things really well. Either they give you no information or they give you a lot of information. So they bury you with so much information that the average person doesn't have the time to go through. And our budget book is an excellent example. Publicly, this budget book has, I don't know, I think it runs into 3 volumes and each volume is 200 pages, like 600 pages of data dump. But you know, it really doesn't give you the level of detail that someone might want. If somebody wanted to know how much money is being spent at my branch library, like how much is my library in my local branch cost? It's very hard to get that number. 600 pages, but you're not going to get that number. So we need to do a better job of providing information. I mean, you could do an FOI, you could do a Freedom of Information and get some of that information, but it shouldn't be that hard. This is your money and my money and the taxpayers' money. And for those who are interested, there should be an easier way for people to know, in an easy to follow way. Like this is what, you know, even me as a counselor, I'd be very curious to know X branch versus Y branch. Like, you know, what is the operating cost? Are there lessons to be learned from each other? Is one operating more efficiently than the other? But if you don't get that level of detail, that's one. And that's why the Auditor General is so important. Keep coming back, because the Auditor General's job is to do value for money audits and to say, if you're spending, for example, if Mississauga had an Auditor General and this transit app money had passed, that Auditor General could have then looked at it and said, why is the city spending $7 million on another app when free apps are available? So even if council didn't catch it, the Auditor General would have caught it. And this is just a small example, right? So the Auditor General, to me, is the critical part of ensuring transparency. And that's why I am so happy that now the region of Peel, which is a bigger government than Mississauga, but I do believe that Mississauga also should have an Auditor General, and hopefully in the next few years, we'll make that happen. But right now, focused on the region of Peel.
Absolutely. Now, I think we talked a little bit about this one. I got to ask you this question. How do you feel about the, a year in now, a little over a year, year and 6 months in the new mayor? I still call her the new mayor, Carolyn Parrish. How do you feel about the new mayor, and how do you feel the job is doing?
Well, you know, I think that Robin is something for the residents of this great city of Mississauga to give a verdict on, and not for me to speak on that.
Still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. So, sorry, I did not hear your answer. Can you repeat the answer? I'll edit that. Don't worry.
I just said that, you know, it's still early. You know, she's not getting a full term. Obviously, it's only a year and a half. But I think at the end of the day, in a democracy, it's not what I think; it's what my residents think as to how the mayor is doing.
Absolutely. I didn't mean to put you on the spot with that question, but I wanted to ask that question. We had an election in June 2024, and you know, I wanted to see what your perspective is.
Against the mayor, so obviously we have some different views on some things, but that's okay.
Yeah, and I think from talking to you, I think not knowing what your platform was when you ran on it, I think financial responsibility would be one item on your platform, which is I hope to see you as a mayor at some point. Hopefully this is not an election campaign or anything. I'm just prophesizing here for you. Hopefully down the road that
right now we have a mayor and I am focused on my Ward 7, but thank you for your support. Yes.
Now, the question on people's mind right now is, how does the municipality behave in an economy the way we're feeling right now? People are getting laid off. People are losing their job. Is it straight math to inflation and other costs that the municipalities are incurring, or do they take the economic situation or they don't? You know, that's not seen. They don't care if, you know, 100,000 people in Mississauga lose their job or not. I have no idea.
You're talking about the city's private sector, right? You're talking about the city's private sector and job losses in the private sector.
That's obviously right. The city private sector. Yeah.
You know, the city of Mississauga does have an economic development office, but I'll be honest that as cities, the way our municipalities and our jurisdictions are in Ontario, we are all creatures of the province. We don't have a lot of direct control over macroeconomic forces that impact our industries and our jobs. So as we see, whether it's the tariffs, whether it's any of these things, there's really very little that the city can do. We rely on the province and the federal government to make sure that our local businesses have adequate support. And we do, you know, during COVID, for example, we had provided GST relief to landlords, just as an example. City-owned buildings. Obviously, I can't tell a private landlord what to do, but when the city was the landlord, we provided some property tax relief, Okay. And we hope that it's passed on. And the other problem is we are providing the property tax relief, but there's no way for me as a counselor to ensure that I'm giving the landlord property tax relief. Is it being passed on to the tenant, right? So those are the limitations that we have. But within the world that and the tools that we have, we try our best. Again, I keep coming back to my problem is not that as a city, I don't want to provide social services. I do. I just don't want to put them on property taxes. So what a lot of cities have been asking for a long time is to give us other revenue tools so that we don't, just like, you know, the provincial government has more than one tax. It has income tax. It has, I guess it collects, you know, goods and services taxes. Let me give you an example. So when a new business comes to Mississauga, the city of Mississauga doesn't necessarily see any benefit from it because we, maybe property taxes if there's a new building built, and then we provide, obviously, we also provide extra services, but we don't get a share of the GST or HST as an example, right? So we don't really get an uplift because we don't have those revenue tools. But that said, more and more, you know, cities are doing their best to attract more, I guess, business and more jobs. For example, when a builder builds, we always require the builder, when they build a high rise, to have retail and office space. So, you know, we ask them to build office space because we don't want Mississauga to be a commuter city. I don't want Mississauga to be the city where you live here, but you have to go to Toronto or Hamilton to work. I want you to live here and work here, right? And so we do what we can to attract local businesses.
You know, the only situation really that came to mind when I asked you that question is the Stellantis closure and in Brampton. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, you know, in that case, you know, the municipality of Brampton was involved. And I was wondering if the city of Mississauga, God forbid, had the same incident or the same situation with the city, because those are probably, you know, your citizens too, they're paying taxes here, et cetera. And as you mentioned, the income tax, part of the income tax goes to the city. So wondering if that would be an event where the city will step in and try to lobby some of those employers to keep their jobs here.
Absolutely. It would lobby the provincial government, we'd lobby the federal government, and we try and work with, like, you know, work with the local. It's really important for the city to have strong relationships with the CEOs of the companies that have head offices in Mississauga, and to make sure that, you know, some of the things that a city can do to make it attractive to residents is housing is affordable. More people live here than employees live here, right? So if you are an employer, you may not put your head office in a city if the housing is so expensive that nobody can live there and they have to all come in from the suburbs. So one of the things, so there are things that as a city we can do to help business, which is, you know, try and make sure our cities are clean, they are safe, they're affordable. I think those are the three top things any city council can do to make a city attractive to businesses.
Now, I'm just about the finish of the podcast, ending the podcast here, Deepika. Have we addressed, is there anything else you'd like to address? To me, I've covered all the questions. And
yes.
Is there any messages on your side that you'd like to share?
Yes. I just want to say that I feel like municipal governments are the governments that residents can feel and touch. You know, defense, international policy, it's not something that, you know, these are federal issues, very important issues, but not something that people can relate to easily. The provincial level, education, healthcare, again, it touches your lives. At the municipal level, you know, you want your snow removed, you want your parks clean, you want your roads maintained. People get municipal government. It touches your lives. And it is the one level of government where I think people actually can wrap their head around the budgets.
Yep.
Because, you know, when I look at the federal government and it's like 50 billion and trillion, like people lose perspective. I lose perspective. I was just reading that the interest on debt federally is $61 billion. The city of Mississauga's budget is $750 million. The whole budget, I mean, the operating budget, not the whole budget, $61 billion a year the federal government is paying in interest. Very hard to wrap your head around. And I believe that good governance begins at the city level. So my ask of residents is make sure that your councillors are watching the pennies. You know, sometimes there's a feeling of saying, oh, it's only $1 million. It's only $7 million. No, it's the principle of the thing. The one thing that I'm guided by, Robin, is long ago when I was a member of provincial parliament, the then premier said one thing. And he said, don't forget that these taxes are being not just paid by the rich. They're also being paid by that woman who's working at McDonald's. You're collecting her taxes as well. And the person who's a janitor and the person who's doing minimum wage jobs, they're still paying taxes. Remember that when you spend their money. It's in my head.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I want to finish on a positive note. So if you were to be on a commercial and somebody asked you the question, promote Mississauga for me as a good place to do business and live, what would you say?
I would say that, you know, Mississauga has a number of advantages. The airport's right in our backyard. So if you wanted to do business and you had your head office in Mississauga and you were traveling worldwide, how easy would it be for you to just come in and check in on your business here in Mississauga? That's number one. It's like so close to the air. Logistics is so easy. Transportation of goods is so easy. If you're Amazon, you want to be next to the airport, right? So we, for us, our geography, on the one side, we have the airport. On the other side, we have Toronto, the largest market. But our costs are not as high as Toronto. So here we are, between the airport and Toronto, you know, great place for business. We are a relatively safe city, clean city, a great city to still raise a family, all very good reasons for business to come to Mississauga. And the world lives here. Literally, the world lives in Mississauga.
Absolutely. Every country is represented here. I want to thank you so much, Deepika, for being with me today. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed this conversation, to be honest with you. My first podcast of this nature. I really enjoyed it. I hope you come back and you share some more information with us.
I would love to. And I would love to.
And always you're welcome on this podcast anytime. You have a message. Would love to broadcast it for you, for the audience. I really appreciate it.
Amazing. Let me know how it goes.
Absolutely. I will keep you posted. I will keep you posted. It's an honor to have you with me. To the audience, I want to thank you so much for being with me today. Thanks for listening in. If you are not a subscriber yet, I highly encourage you to subscribe and beat the rush, because there's a lot of subscribers on and they're coming in fast. And I was telling the counselor a few minutes ago that, you know, we're averaging about 1,000 downloads per day. Maybe that's nothing to somebody who's, you know, watching a podcast with millions of downloads per day. But for something that is started in as a personal initiative, like the localization fireside chat, it was an idea I started back in 2023 during past COVID. And I thought, why don't we have virtual coffee and record these conversations. It's a personal initiative. It's not backed up by anybody. I don't have a $1 million budget pushing it. This is just me doing the podcast and editing it and pushing it myself. It's a one single man effort. So thanks so much for listening and supporting me, liking and commenting on the content. I really appreciate it. And I'll see you at the next episode. Counselor, if you don't mind hanging on 1 minute.